content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This is Karen Edwards for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Modern Maturity. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from various sources. I'm going to start with finishing up an article I was reading last time in AARP, the magazine, under Upfront Go. And this is about the various cities that in Europe that are good to visit and when is the best time. And I have two left. Athens, March through May, sunny, mild weather, more elbow room at the Acropolis, and ancient Agora. September and October, seasonal cultural festivals and performances. Paris, April through June, mild weather, beautiful spring flowers, ideal time to enjoy outdoor cafes. September through December, Paris Autumn Festival. Now, here's another article on what's that flashing yellow arrow? You're about to make a left turn at an intersection when you see something new, a flashing yellow left arrow. What should you do? The short answer, proceed the same way you would when turning left with a solid green light. After yielding to oncoming traffic and pedestrians, make the turn. So why the change of the two signals mean the same thing? Another short answer, clarity. The concern is that drivers turning left on a permissive circular green signal might mistake that signal as implying that the left turn has the right-of-way over opposing traffic. The Federal Highway Administration notes, while not all signals will be converted, expect to continue to see solid greens for left turns, communities that adopt the flashing yellow arrow can expect safer intersections. In 2020, the FHWA found that the signal can reduce crashes related to left turn movements by 15% to 50%. It's a great addition, says Josh Dunning, Vice President of AARP Driver Safety. Left-hand turns are dangerous for everyone driving. Now, under the heading of tech, scan that barcode. It can reveal a lot about products while you're shopping. Barcodes on packages aren't just for the checkout clerk. Now we're all equipped with a barcode reader, says Bob Carpenter, CEO and President of GS1 US, which sets standards for barcoding systems. It's called our mobile phone. Use your phone's camera to scan the lines with the help of apps. Shop Savvy. Scan the barcode for almost any product, and this app will pull up the lowest price at top retailers, as well as price comparisons for sellers across the internet, with estimated shipping costs included. You'll also get product reviews from multiple sources. Then there's MyNet Diary. This app provides much of the same nutritional information you can find on the packaging, but here's the real benefit. It takes all that data on calories, carbs, protein, fat, added sugar, and so on, and assigns a food grade from A to D based on total nutritional value. And the spelling on that is MyNetDiary. Then you have Yuka, Y-U-K-A. This app analyzes ingredients in food and body care products and flags potential allergens, endocrine disruptors, pollutants, carcinogens, or skin irritants. If a product scores low for nutrition or health, you'll get other suggestions. Now we have ride hailing for caregivers, help for getting loved ones to their destination. Ride hailing services like Uber and Lyft can help non-drivers get to doctor's appointments, but arranging a ride for someone else can be difficult. Good news, these services have been working to solve this problem, easing the process for caregivers. Uber. The company announced an initiative called Uber Caregiver, allowing caregivers to arrange rides for another person and communicate with the driver and passenger through a three-way chat. In some cases, users can also pay with a Flex card from a Medicare Advantage plan. Lyft, This service offers Lyft Concierge, through which healthcare providers and other businesses can request, schedule, and pay for rides on behalf of patients. Lyft also provides free or discounted rides through 211, a referral and information line that connects to local health and human services resources. Now it's time to look at prevention's secrets of aging well, and this article is Sleep Myths Debunked. During shut-eye, your brain and body perform critical tasks for overall health, including your lifespan. Here, experts separate more fact from fiction when it comes to all things bedtime. 1. The myth. Some people need only 5 hours of sleep. Myth buster. About 1% of us can function when regularly getting 5 or 6 hours. But for everyone else, 7 or 8 hours of sleep is recommended for optimal health and functioning, says Michael Scullin, Ph.D., a psychology and neuroscience professor at Baylor University in Waco, Texas. Routinely getting less is linked to higher risk for obesity, diabetes, high blood pressure, and memory problems. Also, while some people may think they're doing A-OK on less, they may not realize the cumulative impact lack of sleep is having on their physical and mental health, Scullin says. When people who are sleeping less than 7 to 8 hours start getting that recommended amount, we often see their well-being increase, he says. Number 2, myth. Melatonin is natural, so it's no problem. Myth buster. Taking small doses is generally safe, research shows, but too much can cause headaches, high or low blood pressure, daytime drowsiness, and vomiting. Even at recommended doses, 0.3 milligrams to 5 milligrams, 1 to 2 hours before bedtime, melatonin can cause daytime grogginess or GI effects such as nausea, says Rashad Ramkissoon, MD, a family medicine physician at Houston Medical Methodist in Cypress, Texas. It can also interact with drugs such as contraceptives and blood pressure medications and shouldn't be taken during pregnancy, says Carlira Weiss, Ph.D., RN, a sleep expert and a research assistant professor at the University of Buffalo School of Nursing. Get a doctor's approval before taking melatonin or before giving it to your children. Myth number 3, napping can make up for missed nighttime sleep. Myth buster. If you're short on sleep, a few daytime Z's can make you feel better in the moment, but can't totally replace lost sleep. A nap may not take you through the full 4-stage sleep cycle, so you forego benefits such as stage 3's ability to help boost immunity and repair injuries. Napping can also backfire if you have insomnia or sleep apnea, because it may mean you take longer to fall asleep at night, disrupting your circadian rhythm, Dr. Ramkissoon says. So, nap sparingly. For occasional daytime sleepiness, short 30-minute naps taken before 3 p.m. to avoid grogginess and interference with nighttime sleep can improve alertness, concentration, and attention. Number 4. Myth. Snoring is no big deal if it doesn't bother your partner. Myth buster. Snoring is a top symptom of sleep apnea. That noise occurs because there's an obstruction in the breathing pathway. Not having enough oxygen causes you to awaken sometimes multiple times an hour and makes it harder for blood to be pumped, leading to high blood pressure. This is one reason sleep apnea increases the risk of heart disease, heart attacks, diabetes, and early death. Not all snorers have sleep apnea, and 20% of people who have sleep apnea don't snore. But be aware of symptoms like daytime sleepiness, morning headaches, and high blood pressure. If you think you may have a problem, ask your doctor about a sleep study. Number 5, myth. Having no trouble sleeping means you have a clear conscience. Mythbuster. Not necessarily. Sure, it's possible that you're so virtuous that your life is stress-free. But regularly falling asleep as soon as you lie down, or even just sit, can be a sign of an undiagnosed sleep disorder. In other words, you might not be getting enough quality sleep. If you generally feel well rested during the day, falling asleep quickly may not be a cause for concern. But if you fall asleep at the drop of a hat and have daytime sleepiness, especially if you're falling asleep in public places such as at work, talk to your doctor, because that's a clue that you may not be sleeping well at night. Next time, we'll look at the effects of nutrition on our aging. Now we'll look at AARP The Bulletin and our article we were reading on superagers breakthroughs. How early detection may make Alzheimer's treatable at last. For nearly 7 million Americans who have Alzheimer's disease and millions of others whose family histories point to a strong proclivity for the disease, the challenges of diagnosis remain considerable. The problem is we don't understand the intrinsic mechanisms of the disease yet, so we don't have highly effective interventions, and we don't have enough knowledge about Alzheimer's to cure it, says Luigi Ferrucci, scientific director of the National Institute on Aging, NIA. But as with other parts of the body, early detection and intervention will probably be the key to effective treating diseases of the brain. The only two FDA-approved treatments currently available to slow progression of Alzheimer's, the anti-amyloid drugs lecanemab and donanemab, have to be administered in the early stages of the disease. Until now, the diagnosis of Alzheimer's has been made through PET scans and spinal taps, expensive procedures often inaccessible to people who live in rural areas or who lack insurance or money for pricey diagnoses. That's why the announcement of this past summer by the group of researchers at Lund University in Sweden of the blood tests that can actually accurately diagnose Alzheimer's in routine healthcare settings is a game changer. Rhoda Oll, a professor of anatomy and neurobiology at the Boston University Cobanian and Avedisian School of Medicine, is experimenting with voice-based digital markers as a diagnostic tool for Alzheimer's disease. Traditional cognitive testing for neurodegenerative diseases can be time-consuming and inaccurate. Using a voice-based digital markers, Oh has found that people with cognitive impairment often have detectable acoustic features, such as hesitation and stuttering, that indicate disease much sooner than other diagnostic tools. The idea is to pick up that something is amiss early, then figure out why, Oh says. If you're experiencing a neurodegenerative process, it's not acute but gradual. The longer you can delay the progression or onset of symptoms, the longer you can delay significant consequences of this disease. The goal is to live to end of life cognitively impaired or cognitively intact. Definitely intact. As early diagnostic techniques improve, so do treatment options. Drugs that reduce inflammation in the brain are in clinical trials. The anti-amyloid drugs currently available only slow the disease by about 30%, said Howard Villett, co-founder and chief science officer of the Alzheimer's Drug Discovery Foundation. So we clearly need drugs with other mechanisms to be used in combination with anti-amyloid drugs to slow the disease down further. The goal is to slow the disease by 100%, he says. Drugs reducing inflammation in Alzheimer's disease could achieve this goal, at least in part. DeFino's team at MD Anderson recently identified a molecule that reduces age-related inflammation and improves brain function and muscle function in mice. This could have enormous therapeutic implications for diseases such as Alzheimer's and Parkinson's, as well as heart disease and various forms of cancer. Now, before we go on, there's a sidebar article, My Longevity Secrets. This is by Ronald DeFino, 69, Harry Graves Burkhart III, Distinguished University Chair and past president of the University of Texas at MD Anderson Cancer Center. I consume a balanced diet rich in fish, fruits, and vegetables, and take a baby aspirin and 2,000 IU of vitamin D. Avoid processed and red meats. Perform daily exercise incorporating cardio, bike and elliptical, balance and coordination, taekwondo, strength, weightlifting, and flexibility yoga. Averaging a total of 8 hours per week, I routinely walk 3 miles each night after dinner. Also, no tobacco. Avoid excessive sun. Limit alcohol to 1 glass or less per day. Now we're going to take a look at a rather lengthy sidebar article here, A Perfect Day of Not Aging. As we've seen, every individual, indeed every individual body part, ages at a distinct rate. But there are things you can do that may slow aging or at the very least foster healthy aging. Here's what a day without aging might look like. Who knows? Maybe you'll wake up tomorrow the same age as you are today. 6 to 8 a.m., wake up. Waking up between 6 and 8 a.m. is generally in sync with your body's circadian rhythm, which is the internal clock that regulates your sleep and wakefulness. The American Academy of Sleep Medicine recommends that you wake up no less than 7 and no more than 9 hours after you went to bed. 7 to 9 a.m., a morning walk. Be sure you get some sunlight in the morning, which helps your body produce the vitamin D that may slow the aging process. Make a habit of walking the dog or doing light chores outside first thing in the morning, before the demands of the day trap you in your house, car, or office. 9 to 10, breakfast. Start with a protein smoothie with mixed fruit. A high-protein breakfast is critical for maintaining muscle mass as we age, according to numerous studies. Research shows that getting 25 to 30 grams of protein in the morning is effective in preventing age-related muscle loss, also known as sarcopenia. Noon, meditation. Any calming activity, such as yoga or prayer, can help reduce the risk of cognitive decline by activating the prefrontal cortex, an area of the brain that is diminished in those with cognitive difficulties. A study in the Journal of Alzheimer's Disease found that just 12 minutes of meditation daily could make a big difference. 1 p.m., lunch. Have a mixed salad with salmon, a Mediterranean-style diet that is abundant in fruits and vegetables and omega-3-rich fish, such as salmon, can reduce inflammation, a culprit in biological aging, according to a review of studies in the Journal of Nutrients. Eating a wide range of plant foods boosts the microbiome, the master controller of gut inflammation. 3 o'clock, exercise. Afternoon exercise may reduce the risk of premature death even more than morning or evening workouts, according to a study of more than 90,000 men and women published last year in Nature Communications. Walk briskly for 30 minutes or get some kind of cardio exercise at least 5 days a week and use weights on the other 2 days. 4 to 6 p.m., socialites. Maintaining social connections is one of the pillars of anti-aging, according to several studies. Social isolation in older people can increase the risk for dementia by about 30%, according to researchers at Johns Hopkins University School of Medicine and the Bloomberg School of Public Health. 6 p.m., dinner. Dine on vegetable tacos with brown rice and beans. Eating during an 8 to 12 hour window of the day and fasting for the remaining 12 to 16 hours, including deep sleep, has been shown to have numerous advantages associated with longevity and decreased incidence of disease, including cancers. Lean heavily on vegetables, fruits, nuts, grains, and legumes. Then close your kitchen until the morning. 10 to 11 p.m. bedtime. A UK study found that going to bed between 10 and 11 p.m. may reduce heart disease risk, especially in women. Other research indicates that deep sleep, which occurs from the hours of 10 p.m. to 1 a.m., represents the optimal time for the brain to clear out debris and reorganize itself, reducing one's risk of Alzheimer's disease. I'm going back to AARP, the magazine, for an interview with Danny DeVito under the heading of What I Know Now. On his iconic roles in Taxi and Always Sunny, his go-for-it mantra, and the joy of being a granddad. Noisemaker. I was born in Asbury Park, New Jersey. I was the baby. My sister Teresa was 10 years older. My sister Angie was 16 years older. My mom had two sisters, and none of them shut up, ever. It's an Italian family, so the decibel level is out there. A little smart aleck. I went to Our Lady of Mount Carmel School because if your mother and father didn't know what to do with you, they gave you to the nuns. And still a smart aleck. I remember when Peter, my nephew, was born, I was 7 years old, and I went over and looked into the bassinet, and the first thing he did was pee on me. It was great. I don't think there's a conversation I've had with the guy over all these years where I don't bring up the fact that he peed on me. Also an old softie. Do anything you can to keep on an even keel with your family and friends, no matter what happens in your life. That's all we have. Don't hide things. You've got to get up every day thinking about how you're going to make it easier for the people that you're working with or that you love or that you eat breakfast with. Because it's infectious. Everybody starts feeling good. Falling into the business. Growing up, I had spent weekends at the movies, but I actually wasn't even thinking about doing it. I got introduced to the American Academy of Dramatic Arts in a roundabout way, took a couple of classes, and I got the bug, and thought, I'm not like Cary Grant, but I got a feel for this thing. So I studied, and then I went and started looking for jobs in New York, like every other actor does. I didn't care what the description was. Male, 6'4", 250 pounds. I'd go out for the audition. Once I got in the room, I'm going to do what I'm going to do. Becoming Louis. I wanted that part, Louis De Palma in The Taxi. I walked into the room to audition in front of the four guys who created it, and I said, one thing I want to know before we start, who wrote this shit? And I threw the script on the table. And I had a nanosecond of, did I screw everything up? Then they fell on the floor. Louis walked into their lives. Sudden fame. I went to the market the day after the first episode aired, and people started stopping me on the street. Hey, Louis! They weren't calling me Danny. After a couple of days of this, I called my publicist and said, this is really crazy. People are chasing me down the street. He says, Danny, you don't have to worry until that stops happening. Now it's all Frank, 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 because of It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, which is good. The fans are all you have. Still evolving. I think I'm bolder than I've ever been. I don't monitor myself as much. I do say things that are, like, pretty far out, that are really weird, and sometimes I'm inappropriate. But I am always respectful. And that's because of my two sisters. I swear to God, you have to respect other people's space. My happy place. Since my two grandbabies have been born, I am just incorrigible. You gotta tamp me down in the joy department. You know what I'm saying? I'm just so lucky. Blessings have been showered down on me. I wish that for everybody. And the thing is to be aware of. Don't let it go. Rhea Perlman, DeVito's wife, from whom he is separated but with whom he still spends a lot of time, and I were always able to see those little incremental changes when our kids were growing up. And I tell my kids that with their babies. Don't miss a thing. Don't look away. A Sudden Case of Holidays. I'm in the movie A Sudden Case of Christmas with my daughter Lucy, who plays my daughter. It's just a real warm, wonderful movie, and I love doing it. As far as the actual holidays go, we have family dinners. Basically, we're Italian, so you know, anyone who's around, we grab. We get to celebrate all the holidays because Rhea's parents were Jewish, so we did all the Jewish holidays, and we do all the Catholic holidays, or Italian holidays. My mantra, it's always a good thing to be positive about life, and always get out of bed, thinking today's the day you're really going to kick its ass. That's the way to do it. And this was as told to Lisa Rosen. Actor, director, and producer Danny DeVito, 80, won an Emmy for his portrayal of the cantankerous Louis De Palma in Taxi and plays the indelible Frank Reynolds in It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, now in its 17th season. He stars in the new movie, A Sudden Case of Christmas, in theaters and streaming now. We have a time for a few more money-saving tips. Let's start with these under the travel headline. Buy a reusable water bottle. It needs to be empty to get through airport security. Then fill it for the flight, then again when you land, and before you leave your hotel each day. Your goal? Spend $0 on basic hydration when traveling. Be a night owl. Amtrak continues to offer ultra-low night owl fares for trips between stations along the Northeast Corridor from 7 p.m. to 7 a.m. A night owl fare from Philadelphia to Baltimore is only $5, and you can travel from New York to Washington, D.C. for $20. Lock in Christmas travel in early October. Data from Google Flights shows that for flights starting in mid-December, average prices bottom out 71 days before departure. Book flights way ahead of using miles, if using miles. Airplane tickets booked with points are typically fully refundable, and your miles or points simply go back into your account. That means you can use points to buy a ticket as soon as it's available. After that, you can monitor the cash price for tickets until the flight. If you see a great cash price, go ahead and make the purchase and cancel the award ticket. Well, folks, I think we have come to the end of our time for today's program. Yep, we're out of time for today's episode of Modern Maturity. Be sure and listen at the same time next week. I do hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Karen Edwards, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Modern Maturity is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again, 919-832-5138. And thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.